In recent years, we've actually taken a theme. 1 year we looked at change and consolidation. Another year we looked at building bridges. Last year we thought about space and place. And now the theme for this year is love and the people of God. Not just love, but love and the people of God. And we have a theme so that we may look at something systematically and in some depth, not just skating over things, but coming back, revisiting things, talking about these themes in our vision building days, in our small groups, talking about how that theme affects our lives. We're aiming to develop our understanding, but also our practice. We don't just want to be able to be knowledgeable, we want to put that into practice. And often we've used the theme as a lens, as it were, to examine various scriptures in greater depth. And today there's going to be an 8-point slide presentation here, which you can follow if you find that helpful. And also we'll be looking at two passages, one that we've already read out and another one that we've yet to read. So if you like to follow in the Bible when we come to those, I will announce those. Thanks very much. And you'll see that today we're really beginning with asking the question, what is love? What is love? And during the year, we're going to consider what I've actually called the four loves. Now, I've stolen that title from a man called C.S. Lewis, who talked about the four loves. Love is spoken of in all sorts of films and books and literature and poems. And in the New Testament times, the language that was used to write the New Testament was Greek. And there are four words for love. And most of you will have seen these words before. I don't particularly expect you to remember the Greek words. I may not even do that, but to remember what those four types of love are, because there are different types of love. Storge speaks about family, love, and affection, and many people have experienced love within their family. Sometimes it's a good experience of love, and sometimes it's a distorted experience of love. And probably none of us, however good our family, have experienced the purest forms of love. Then there's Eros, which everybody knows about, and they think about the statue in Piccadilly, which is to do with sexual love and passion. It's not a negative word, it's actually a positive word, but the word Eros. So you've got family love and affection, and you've got sexual love and passion. And then the word philia, which is to do with true friendship and affection. And the Greeks held this in highest regard. And then the fourth word, which those of you that have been around Christian churches a long time will actually know, is the Christ-like love, which is called agape. It's unconquerable goodwill. This sort of love never allows bitterness to creep in, and it seeks other people's highest good. So try to remember in your mind, but I guess by the end of the year, everybody will have it there. There can be love within the family, there can be sexual love, there can be love for friends, and Christ-like love. Those are four words that are used. We have a bit of a disadvantage in the UK in that we just have one word, and so we have to go on to explain what it is. I'm going to refer to the passage which I actually read at the beginning of the service, which is about God's love. And I read from 1 John chapter 4. Let's just remind ourselves of what I actually read out. And if you are good at learning Bible verses, these are some good ones to learn. But you could just remember three words, which are God is love. God's nature is love. And on page 306 in our Bibles, we just read this, verses 7 to 10 and then 16 to 19. Dear friends, let us love one another, because love comes from God. Whoever loves is a child of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. And God showed his love for us by sending his only Son into the world so that we might have life through him. This is what love is. It is not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the means by which our sins are forgiven. And from verse 16, and we ourselves know and believe the love which God has for us. God is love. And those who live in love live in union with God, and God lives in union with them. Love is made perfect in us in order that we may have courage on judgment day. And we will have it because our life in this world is the same as Christ's. There is no fear in love. Perfect love drives out all fear. So then, love has not been made perfect in anyone who is afraid, because fear has to do with punishment. We love because God first loved us. And there's a sermon in each phrase or short sentence there. God is love, but not all so-called love is of God. I once heard a man trying to justify to me and to Jeff his adultery by saying that he loved the woman with whom he had been unfaithful, and so it must be okay with God. Well, of course, it all depends on what you think love is. This passage teaches us that all Christian love, that is agape, is derived from God. The originality of the New Testament is that it uses agape in a new way, a special way. Agape love goes on loving even if the object is repulsive. You say, do you really mean that strongly? Yes. The love of God, Christ-like love, goes on loving even if the object, namely human beings, is repulsive. God's love for humanity is demonstrated by Jesus Christ, agape love. And in our rebellion, we are unlovely to God, but he loves us. God is not pleased with human lives. There is much about our lives which do not please God, and yet he loves us. Now, some of us rely on that too much. We think, whatever I do, God will still love me, so I'll just keep on doing some of the same old things, and that is really not good enough. But God, it is true, will still love us. That is God's love. In this passage, we can see in others that there is a real contrast with eros, that sexual love, which loves what is attractive. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily, in the right place, the right time. But eros, sexual love and passion, will love what we find attractive. But the love of God is even stronger than that. God will love us even if he finds us unlovely. Our aim, I believe, must be to see agape love, Christ-like love, transform every kind of love. That is the love we have for family, the love we have for friends, and dealings with others we meet. God's love, Christ-like love, needs to transform our love in every situation, to take it to a higher quality, a deeper depth, as it were. That's the thing. These types of love don't need to be kept separate. God's love, Christ-like love, needs to transform other types of love. Thank you. We see the theme of love and the people of God developing through the Bible. We're not told it all in one place, all at one time, but it develops through the 60-odd books of the Bible, written by different people in different situations and at different times. It actually develops. Christians, as well as many, many others, have given much thought to what love is. And so we will also think through this year, what is love? And we'll look for our own understanding of love to grow. There are incredible claims made about love, wonderful songs, wonderful poetry, whole books, and so on. And if you look on the back of your flame sheet, you will see just a few that I've cherry-picked and written down. I've asked you to think about what you think about them. They're on the back. Incredible claims are made about love, but also an awful lot of rubbish is spoken to about love. An awful lot of rubbish. Perhaps we need to become more discerning. Just as children need to grow and learn what love is, so also human beings throughout the whole of their lives need to develop an understanding of the nature of different types of love, but also the distortions of love. That love can be abusive and perverse. And what is called love is sometimes a distortion, an abuse of the true understanding. Most recently, in the last 30 years or so, we've unearthed the scale of the strangely named perversion of love called paedophilia. Abusive love, love for children that is not loving, is abusive and perverse and self-gratifying. I pick that one because it obviously leads the scale of people's horror at what's been discovered. But there are many distortions of love, which perhaps we're not so shocked by, but nevertheless are distortions. And hopefully during this year, we'll develop our understanding and our practice of Christ-like love, or agape. And that's one of my aims at undertaking the theme for this teaching. What are we aiming at this year? What am I aiming at and praying for to be accomplished through the teaching ministry of this church? Is that our understanding and practice of Christ-like love will grow. That it will grow in our midst and be taken by us into our homes, into our workplaces and communities. Thank you. We're going to read in a moment this passage in 1 Corinthians 13. I'm actually going to read it from a different translation so that it will hopefully grab us in new ways. In this passage, 1 Corinthians 13, Paul gives us his compact treatise about love, and it's read out at most Christian weddings. Love is seen as both active and passive. And as we read, we can see the things love does and the things it doesn't do. Love, or agape, is therefore not a feeling. It's an act of the will. Emotions can be tied into it, but primarily it's to do with decisions and actions. So I read to you from the Message translation, which I think on this passage, I have to say, is exceptionally good. The way of love. If I speak with human eloquence and angelic ecstasy, but don't love, I'm nothing but the creaking of a rusty gate. If I speak God's words with power, revealing all his mysteries and making everything plain as day, and if I have faith that says to a mountain, jump, and it jumps, but I don't love, I'm nothing. If I give everything I own to the poor and even go to the stake to be burned as a martyr, but I don't love, I've gotten nowhere. So no matter what I say, what I believe, and what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. Lovely. Love never gives up. Love cares more for others than for self. Love doesn't want what it doesn't have. Love doesn't strut, doesn't have a swelled head, doesn't force itself on others, isn't always me first, doesn't fly off the handle, doesn't keep score of the sins of others, doesn't revel when others grovel, takes pleasure in the flowering of truth, puts up with anything, trusts God always, always looks for the best, never looks back, but keeps going to the end. Love never dies. inspired speech will be over someday. Praying in tongues will end. Understanding will reach its limit. We know only a portion of the truth, and what we say about God is always incomplete. But when the complete arrives, our incompletes will be cancelled. When I was an infant at my mother's breast, I gurgled and cooed like an infant. When I grew up, I left those infant ways for good. We don't yet see things clearly. We're squinting in a fog, peering through a mist. But it won't be long before the weather clears and the sun shines bright. We'll see it all then, see it all as clearly as God sees us, knowing him directly, just as he knows us. But for right now, until the completeness, we have three things to do to lead us towards the consummation. Trust steadily in God, hope unswervingly, love extravagantly, and the best of the three is love. Good translation, isn't it? What a wonderful passage. Thank you. Thank you. The passage says very clearly that I should desire to speak for God, but if I do not show love, I am an ugly sound. As we look at this amazing passage, there's a whole set of teaching about how the people of God, the church, should relate to one another. So this shouldn't just be read at marriages. It should be read to the church at regular intervals. It's a passage both about the use of spiritual gifts and the spiritual disciplines, but also about the power of love that should govern all, should govern our relationships at all times. I may have great discernment, and I may exercise great faith and in prayer command things to happen, but if I do not show love, I gain nothing. I may give all my money to the poor and even become a martyr, but if I don't love, I am nothing. The passage was, of course, written by Saul, who became Paul. As a Pharisee, Saul experienced the love of God and began to love people as God did. As a Christian, Paul did exercise all the gifts and the spiritual disciplines that we've read out. He spoke in tongues, he had discernment, he spoke eloquently. He was prepared to be martyred for his faith. He gave away the money he had. But he sought to do everything he did in love, in agape, in Christian love. And as individual Christians and as a church, we're to seek to use our gifts and to exercise spiritual disciplines in the church and outside the church, but always in love. We need to grow, therefore. We need to change so that we may have more of the heart of God. Saul knew he had to change if he was to please God. And we need to know that we need to go on being changed by the power of love. The power of God's love. The power of love to change. Thank you. In the chapter, you'll see examples being given of what love does do and what love doesn't do. And in some of them, you'll feel guilty. Others, you'll feel, yeah, I'm not too bad at that. And we need to be absolutely realistic and honest about our lives as Christian people. Love never gives up and cares more for others than self. It doesn't strut or want what it doesn't have. Love doesn't have a swelled head or force itself on others. Love trusts God always and keeps going to the end. That's just a few things. So we know we've got a lot to learn, don't we? And love, like that, needs to invade our friendships and our family and all of our relationships. The passages recognizes that as an infant, I was totally dependent on my mother's love. Now, some of us may not know, have known our mother's love, but the image is understood, isn't it? Even for breast milk to survive, the babe is totally dependent. But now, as I grow up, I must be the one showing love, not always looking to receive love, although that is wonderful, and there needs to be an expectation of that. But I must show love to other people. And unless I know the love of God, I will not be able to love other people with Christ-like love. My love constantly runs out. So unless I go back and experience the love of God and reflect upon that, I will not be able to love that which is unlovely. But agape love loves that which is unlovely. Thank you. This passage teaches so clearly that one day spiritual gifts will no longer be needed. They are needed at the moment, all the spiritual gifts. But agape will never end. Families may die. Eros may wane. Friendships may change, but agape love is the greatest and it will never die. Love for our family, love for our friends, love for our spouses is to be invaded by Christ-like love. That's the sort of love we have that does continue, that can continue in the situations where we are. Agape love cannot die because God is love and God generates this love in others. This love cannot be overcome. The body may die, but the Spirit of God will rise. Agape love will never be defeated. We're just at a beginning, and there is just so much for us to be thinking about. Thanks, Jeff. In the year that goes on, there is so much to discover that God has to teach us. All of us have experienced something of God's love, but he wants us to understand more. And as we understand more, we can be sure that our love for others will grow. It will affect our family life, our church life, our community life. It will affect all of our relationships.